Hey Colin, Spencer here. Just listening to what you were saying about armour, all very interesting. I was watching a fellow on YouTube, may have been the same guy, demonstrating just how agile you can be while wearing full plate armour, and how it's not as cumbersome as chainmail because the weight is evenly distributed about your body compared to chainmail, which just hangs off of your shoulders. Obviously, the main drawback of full plate armor being that it was extremely expensive and difficult to come by, and took an extremely skilled craftsman to create a full set of armor. Anyway, you may have seen that, you may not have seen it, but I just thought it might interest you.
Searching for moons, poured evil over in an ancient room. Was a fortunate son of the OSR. Without a 10-foot pole, I wouldn't get very far. The ground was murky and I caught a look as the dungeon master opened up his grim tooth book. And then I fell into a spike pit. Oh yeah, spike pit. Oh, a pit would have spikes in it.
I'm Colin Green, and you are listening to Spike Pit. So following on from the topic of flaming oil, I want to get this understanding of how things work in games. I don't want to just be guessing. I'm on a bit of a fact-finding mission in the spirit of improving my rulings. Spencer, aka Free For All, at the start of the show there, talking about looking at YouTube and sort of studying the work of other people that are exploring how things may have worked in days gone by. And this doesn't need to be about simulationism. It's just trying to get that verisimilitude in your games, getting a believable game that makes sense. I feel that the more I understand about things that really I'm not familiar with on a day-to-day basis, the more I can make a convincing experience for the players in my games. Be sure this doesn't mean I need to have a lot of rules. It's just a way of approaching decisions and thinking about things. So that's what I'm going to do. I've got some call-ins from a few people and I've got an email to read out. And it's going to be around this topic, in particular armor, but also other equipment.
Colin, it's Arlen. So I listened to your episode on equipment rules, and I really like the idea of kind of abstracted equipment rules. You don't necessarily have to decide what you have until you need it, partly because I think it ties into an idea that I have been kind of tinkering with, which is basically representing your character's expertise as they're supposed to have within the fiction, within the game, and specifically the idea that if your character is an adventurer, surely they should have some idea of what they need to bring on an adventure, right? They have an idea that, oh, I'm just going to grab this stuff, and you can represent that with an adventurer's kit. In the same way that players don't have to know how actual sword fighting works in order to fight with a sword as their character in D&D, I think it ties into the same sort of thing that I think generally in games, we need to be cognizant of the fact that if there's something that a character should know or a character should know how to do that a player doesn't necessarily know or know how to do, that it's a good idea to figure out a way to let the character do that without impeding on the player's abilities. So like, for instance, with diplomacy checks, I really like the idea of if a player wants to say, look, I don't know what this person wants to hear, but I want to roll a check, basically represent the character's instincts or their kind of fundamental abilities taking over away from the player, I think that's totally fine. And I think that having something like just adventuring gear that is assumed to include whatever sort of stuff that you need regularly while adventuring is a good way to do that, to represent the idea that, okay, your character is a professional. They know how adventuring works and what sort of stuff that they need. And so they have a bag full of the gear that they just expect that might be necessary. Instead of saying like, okay, well, as the player, you need to know and think about all these things. It to me is sort of like, you know, we don't narrate when characters need to go to the bathroom, although surely they do need to go to the bathroom in the fiction, but that's not interesting. And we just assume that characters can take care of that by themselves. Why can't they take care of equipment by themselves? And now I'm aware that there's a sort of reductio ad absurdum that you could take that too far and say, well, the character knows how to do everything. Why are you even playing the game? I really do think that there's a sort of happy medium. And generally, I mean, you may have been able to guess from the sort of games that I like to run. I like the idea of having essentially you, the player, are playing the character's highest level conscious thoughts, not all of their thoughts. And so if they just take care of stuff in the background, you know, the same way that I, as a person, can sort of do portions of my day job without really thinking about it, the adventurer ought to be able to do kind of some adventure-y things without really thinking about it.
So that was Arlen Walker. He's got a podcast called Live from Pelham's Waste, playing quite a few different games with Arlen. He does like to get this sort of stuff right, and I'm in support of that. Whether you use a lot of rules or you do it more on the fly based on your knowledge, I don't think that is super important. This is a classic discussion here around character knowledge versus player knowledge. I think perhaps in Birth of the Hobby back in the 70s, people may have been playing RPGs for a bit of a different reason. I think it was more of a test of skill. Sometimes, you know, almost like I find in some RPGs, players take a real pride in their character builds and their knowledge of a system that's got a lot of rules in it that kind of needs a lot of study and a system mastery. And they perhaps wear their system mastery somewhat like a sports person might have a shelf full of trophies. They get a sense of reward, a sense of achievement from tackling something that is kind of a real endeavor. But I'm not so much interested in that. What I want to do is I want to create an immersive game, having kind of good knowledge of the way things work within the fictional world is important to me. But the other thing I want to see is I want to see emerging ideas, characters, places, this whole kind of thing that you get from collaborative storytelling and playing the game. If you're playing a rogue, if you nail down what's in his bag before you even set out on a journey, you're potentially losing opportunity to come up with something cool in the fiction. If you keep that a little bit flexible, and there's examples of this in my actual play of Tunnel Goons recently with my family, they're pulling stuff out of their bags that perhaps they wouldn't have thought of bringing along. And it's always been cool, always been enjoyable and fun. There's a little bit of negotiation about it sometimes if it doesn't seem reasonable. But for me, this is definitely the way to go. And if you don't really fully understand how your character is going to be in play, you've just generated this character and you need, you know, a little while for it to settle in, then having flexibility with your equipment like this is a brilliant way to kind of support that emergent story, even if it's just funny little knickknacks that are in the bag or you sort of suddenly announce, oh, well, there's a, I don't know, a lame monkey in the bag that can do ventriloquism or something. I mean, I don't know. And I don't want to know. I want to find out through play. So thanks for the call in, Arlen. Yeah, I've wandered a little bit from what you was talking about there. I am aware of that. Armour, realism and living rules. Hi Colin, really enjoyed episode 192 and the abbreviated drive-by format. This allows me to cram almost two shows into my daily lunchtime. You mentioned that wargamers tend to be well read on their periods of interest. As I came to RPGs from historical wargaming, I happen to agree. Old school RPGs are a derivative of wargaming. They lose the ingrained historical perspective that is baked into their rules when they are played by fantasists without deeper knowledge of medieval and ancient history. More specifically, the arms, armour, garments and equipment of the fighting man. Here are two books I recommend that are lavishly illustrated primers for the uninitiated on the topic. Arms and Armour of the Medieval Knight, an illustrated history of weaponry in the Middle Ages by Edge and Paddock. Greece and Rome at War by Connolly. For you and your UK listeners, one of the finest museums on the subject is in Leeds and has free admission, and that is the Royal Armoury Museum. Keep up the great work and make mine spike pit. Sincerely, Thaddeus G. Moore. So I don't get too many emails. That makes a change. One from Thaddeus. And now you know why I don't get too many emails. Very informative, echoing some thoughts that I kind of more of a hunch that I had, really, and my observations. It's nice to get a confirmation that I was getting along the right lines with my my observation of war gamers. I've always found them to be very knowledgeable. I kind of wondered if it was just my club, but seems it's just a wargamer thing. I do happen to know that quite a lot of wargamers I've met have in fact been history teachers or ex-servicemen. Thaddeus mentions Leeds Armoury, and that is indeed on my list of places to visit. I also noticed that they produce a set of publications on various different aspects of arms and armour. Probably when I've got through some of my reading backlog, that's something I'm going to have a look at. Before I leave you with Arlen and a closing message, I just want to say thanks to the guys who called in. Spencer, aka Free For All from Keep Off The Borderlands, got that excellent email in from Thaddeus G. Moore, and then of course just mentioned him, Arlen Walker, live from Pelham's Waste. Thanks for calling in, guys. As always, I encourage anybody listening to this, if you've got something to say, drop a message on Anchor. My email alternatively is in the show notes. A big thanks also goes out to the Pit crew, my patrons over at the Spike Pit Patreon, keeping me going and growing. Last but not least, I want to say a big thank you to you, the listener, for taking a bit of time out of your day to listen to old Spike Pit. Take care. I'll catch you later.
Hey Colin, it's Arlen. So I have a lot of thoughts about realism and armor and all that sort of stuff. And I was going to send just like 20 voice messages with all of my ideas and just kind of spam you with that. And then I thought, no, that's not really the thing to do. The thing to do is to record my own episode of my own podcast where I talk about this stuff, where I can go on at length and people can just fast forward when they're not interested. And then just tell you to, if you're not listening to Live from Pelham's Wasteland regularly, which I don't know why you would be, because the dude who runs it doesn't even update it half the time. but you should listen to the next episode I'm going to put out. And it's going to have a lot of stuff about real world, kind of real armor, real battle considerations, all of that sort of stuff. Thank you.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.